Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. If you're also listening on the internet tubes, point it to KBOO.FM.
No more tubes.
Oh, it's plenty of tubes.
No tubes.
It's all kind of tubes. Okay. All kind of tubes, Joe.
All right. The Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. Number to call, 231-8187.
We're also, as always, take your written comments if you're unable to make your way to a phone. You can write to us at our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Or over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. We're going to dip our toes into a rather interesting discussion today on the
dip
program.
Dip our toes?
It's a metaphor.
I see.
Okay. And if you're going to challenge me on every single metaphor, this is going to be a long hour.
It's going to be a long hour.
All right. So there's a number of sacred cows that are under assault in the United States these days. There's a movement.
Like democracy?
Like democracy. Yeah, precise. Like the right to vote. You know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
We've seen over the past year or so Confederate monuments coming down across the South. We've seen at long last powerful men being held to account for their sexual misdeeds. And we're seeing all sorts of conversations about things that many Americans have taken for granted as part of our mythology. And one of those things is an unquestioned reverence for the members of the founding generation.
Right.
So joining us here today in studio are Mr. Clifford Walker and his grandson, Mr. Andre Walker, both residents of the Humboldt neighborhood of North Portland. And we're here today talking about an upcoming community meeting at which the subject of changing the name of Jefferson High School will be discussed. And as you might imagine, there are strong opinions on both sides of this question.
You have strong opinions on both sides?
There are strong opinions.
Oh, there are strong.
On both sides.
Yeah, I'm
going to
play
question.
Devil's advocate.
You're going to play devil's advocate?
Definitely.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. All right. Andre, why don't you tell us a little bit about... a little bit about this question and why you're putting it to the larger community.
So I think it really started with conversations I've had with my grandfather surrounding figures in our community that we hold value to. In our community in the Humboldt neighborhood, Thomas Jefferson High School is kind of the center of the neighborhood, and it's got a lot of history in the neighborhood, and we came to the conclusion that it's not an accurate representation of what we believe Humboldt neighborhood's about, what Portland's about, what critical thinking is about. And so we organized to bring our community together and see if they agree with us.
So why do you hold the opinion that it's inappropriate for a high school to be named for Thomas Jefferson?
I think that Thomas Jefferson was a figure that participated in heinous crimes, both physically and ideologically, that had tremendous impacts on people in the United States of America. And as such, he shouldn't be a representative.
That, I have to say that makes a certain amount of sense. Also, I would imagine that Jefferson... as Oregon's only majority African-American high school, I imagine that they're having it named for a slaveholder. I imagine that causes a certain amount of friction, both
Absolutely.
For the students and members of the community.
Absolutely.
So what do you say to charges that Thomas Jefferson is a revered member of the founding generation, the author of the Declaration of Independence, the author of the Virginia Statute for Religious Liberty that outlines why a church and state ought to be separated? What do you say to charges that he is deserving of reverence and that the school ought to be named for him?
Absolutely. Well, there certainly are things that he did that are noteworthy and critical for creating the United States we see today. But the United States we're living today is actually quite problematic. I think a lot of the things that he did have led to certain racial relations that we're feeling in 2018. And ways of thinking about people that he really perpetuated in those early stages. He was a part of the group of people that signed a contract that said that black people would never or should never be equal to white people, right? And so that's what he founded. He played a role in creating that ideology that persists here.
That's true. And he also felt free to take liberties with his female slaves.
Absolutely.
We know that he... has living descendants today from one of his slaves, Sally Hemings,
mm-hmm.
Whom he took with him against her will on his famous trip to France. So I think I have to say I understand where you're coming from here. But, Joe, I guess you don't feel quite the same way.
First of all, I absolutely agree that Jefferson, in fact, his whole generation, North and South, were absolutely racist, absolutely believed in the inferiority of African Americans. There's no question about any of that. All that's real. All that's true. They also lived in a time that was incredibly, incredibly reactionary from our perspective. Mm-hmm. And certainly Jefferson is a very good figure to look at as an example of that, a bad example in many ways of that time. I'm just not sure that symbolic action, getting rid of the name Jefferson, getting rid of the name, I think, Washington, because he was much worse. And by the way, Jefferson was even worse than we've said. He had the opportunity to free his slaves, but he wanted to buy better wine. I'm not making that up.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm not making that up. That was one of his big things. Oh, French wine. Woo, woo, woo. So rather than setting people free, he bought more wine. So I'm not going to defend Jefferson's behavior as a slaveholder, nor am I going to defend, for that matter, the Constitution's compromise on slavery, if indeed it was a compromise, that essentially legitimized the holding of people against their will, the shipping of people out of Africa, and so on. All that's wrong. All that was vicious. All that was horrible. We're still suffering from the consequences of that on so many levels. But I'm not sure that symbolic action, getting rid of the name Jefferson, getting rid of the name Washington, and so on for schools, is going to do much. But maybe it will. I'm really caught in a kind of a dilemma here. I believe that the creation of the country was a good thing overall. But I also believe that the compromises and the assumptions of a fundamentally racist European culture poisoned the well of America and still has poisoned the well of America. So I'm caught in a kind of a dilemma here personally. Mm-hmm. But I'm willing to hear the argument. I just am dubious because I don't think that symbolic behavior equates necessarily with real change in a society. But I'm not the person who's victimized here. So, you know, I'm standing by, as it were.
Right. So to that, I pose, where do we start if it's not with symbols, right? That is the human experience. We relate to each other through images and language and symbology. Nazi Germany took down their flag. They took down statues. I don't believe there's any high schools in Germany named after Adolf Hitler. Right?
Certainly not.
And why not? I guess would be the question.
Well, because he lost.
Because he lost. Okay.
I'm very.
That's okay. Yeah. Absolutely. It is because if he had won, there certainly would have been. But I think there's a reason. Thomas Jefferson represents something.
Yes.
To me, he represents something, and I feel something if I have to enter a space named after him. And what that says is that our society hasn't progressed far enough to recognize that this character's beliefs permeate. It has an actual effect on my being as a person living. And I guess it's really the power of symbols. I think symbols can be very quite powerful, even a name.
Well, I think that's a good argument. I have a certain cynical attitude toward America. I have never believed that we were, in fact, created as I probably you as well, learned in school. I have always thought that it was largely an economic endeavor.
Absolutely.
It was largely poisoned at the well from the very beginning by the use of enslaved people. Mm-hmm. And that slavery extended well beyond simply forcing people to work for the rest of their lives and forcing their children to work for the rest of their lives. It involved every kind of life experience, including the ability to choose one's own life partner and so on. So I got no problem with that. Where I'm concerned is, if we simply knock out the symbols of racism, do we actually deal with the reality of racism? I'm just not sure that's so helpful.
And absolutely, I don't think taking down the symbols solves racism, but I think it's a good place to start. How can we say that we're proactive against racist ideology if we have symbols of racism sitting in our face on a regular basis?
Well, I hear you. I certainly hear you.
Now, I should mention that Clifford, you're a member of the board of the Humboldt Neighborhood Association, and it is you who has carried this cause forward over the past several years. And this last fall, the board of the Humboldt Neighborhood Association adopted a policy saying that the public institutions ought not to retain names of slaveholders and other people who didn't believe in the absolute equality of all people, including such places as Jefferson High School. Full disclosure, I am also a member of the board of the Humboldt Neighborhood Association, although I was not present for the vote when that policy was enacted. So why don't you tell us a little bit, Clifford, about why you came to the board and why you urged it to pass that policy.
Well, thanks, Abe. As a community activist, I get involved where I feel welcome, and I've always felt welcome at the Humboldt Neighborhood Association and became a part of that socialization and activity there. It was quite apparent to me that in my quest to reshape or rid the community of symbols of racism, we might want to start at the center of our neighborhood, and there's a statue to a white supremacist slave trader at the front door of the high school, and I attended the school, and even in the 60s when I attended school, many of the students were aware of the fact that we needed to deal with the daily insults of a school named after one of Virginia's largest traders in African flesh.
Now, thank you for that. I mentioned the policy adopted by the Neighborhood Association. This coming Monday, the 29th of January, that policy, that question is going to be put before the larger community in the context of Jefferson High School. And this meeting is going to happen at 5:30 p.m., is that right?
Absolutely.
5:30 p.m. at the North Portland Library on Killingsworth Street, adjacent to Jefferson High School. And that's going to allow the larger community to weigh in on this issue. How do you what's your sense of that? Where do you think the community falls on this question?
Well, I don't know for sure. That's why we're having this meeting.
Of course.
My community, the people that I engage with on a regular basis, seem to be supportive of it. A lot, I think, of the issues people don't actually know. We're not taught to learn about what Jefferson, who he was, and the atrocities that he committed. And I think maybe bringing to light some of those, it's not really a hard decision, I don't think. And I know that there's a lot of people, I think, I'm hoping to get people that are from the community that attended Jefferson High School and have something to bring to the story, bring to the table and talk about their experiences. But it's really a community exercise in critical thinking and saying, why does this matter? Why is this important? Why do symbols matter? Or do they at all, right? And so we'll see what they think.
I locate the problem in the mythologies that we're all taught in school. Not to say that's the problem. The problem to me is our kind of government system and our kind of economic system. And, of course, the way in which minorities have been treated to reinforce and establish that. There's no question that Jefferson was a slave man, slaveholder. There's no question that he was, on this issue, timid and, we'll say chicken, and I can't say the last part of that. There's no question that Washington was likewise. There's no question that the Constitution of the United States was essentially a compromise, if even that, allowing an assumption that was a common intellectual conceit of Europeans at the time, that Africans were somehow inferior human beings. The proof of that, in that sense of quotations around that proof, was that they were able to be forced to be workers forever, not just in one generation, but forever, literally. And, of course, the only resolution that could come from that was the Civil War. And, one might add, after the Civil War, the South did not give up. It continued its racist policies through black codes, and then later through segregation. Plessy v. Ferguson established through the Supreme Court the legitimacy of separate but equal. Beyond all that, those statues that we're taking down now were in fact built in the early 20th century for the most part. So the whole issue was not going way back. The whole issue is still very much a 20th century and, I'm afraid, 21st century issue. So I'm kind of caught on this. On the other hand, if we're going to destroy all of the the symbols of this mythology that creates a nation state, then we need to really think about what we're doing. I'm not saying we're not. I'm not saying that you're not. But it's a really big, really big move, because, in fact, I agree with stupid Trump when he said, well, what are we going to do? Do away with Washington? And the answer would have to be, from what you're saying, yeah.
It would be absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we're challenged to imagine a nation that doesn't pedestal white supremacists as leadership or role models. I mean, most people can't even imagine that if they looked at a dollar bill or looked at our nation's currency. I mean, if you travel, you know that currency from other countries have symbols that represent their economy. What our money represents is racial oppression. You have Washington, you have Jefferson, you have
Jackson.
Jackson, my favorite, my all-time favorite.
You know, yeah. And I'm saying, can you imagine if we switched it up with the abolitionists and how that might change the thinking of the community?
Right, or even if we, you know, just slapped a picture of Mount Hood on the money instead of somebody at all.
Public
right.
Works, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I want to talk about this question of symbols for a moment. Because, Andre, you mentioned earlier, you go to Germany, you don't see any statues of Nazis. Mm-hmm. And, Joe, you just mentioned how across the old Confederacy, these statues of Confederate generals were erected, usually or mostly long after the Civil War had ended. So I would put this to you, Joe. If symbols aren't powerful, then why did the white people in the South go out of their way to erect symbols of a defeated armed rebellion all over the South, if for no other reason than to remind everyone who's in charge? So I think it's pretty clear the symbols carry a great deal of power, and I think it's entirely appropriate for us in the 21st century to look at Jefferson as a whole man and to rightfully condemn him for the practices by which he lived his life. And let's face it, the practices that gave him the leisure time to be the political philosopher that so many people around the world cherish. I think it's right for us to challenge that. I think it's right for a community to change the name of a high school if they want to. And I would remind people that this doesn't mean we have to abandon Jefferson, the political philosopher. We don't have to abandon the man who wrote the Declaration of Independence. We don't have to abandon the man who wrote the Virginia Statute for Religious Liberty. We don't have to do that. But I think it's okay to change the name of a high school in recognition of the fact that this man was a slave owner. I think we can have it both ways here in the 21st
century. First of all, I don't want to, in my little game here, I don't want to come out saying, oh, well, Jefferson is this and Jefferson was that. But on the other hand, he was this and that. There's no question in my mind that, and I said this at the beginning, that what we're taught in school, in the experience that I had and in many cases, now, I've also taught U.S. history in the university level, where we don't as much mystify, but we still do to some degree. And I really do believe that your argument is valid. That is to say, this guy was a slaveholder. This guy, the women with whom he was intimate had no real choice. That in fact, as I said earlier, I mean, he really had the opportunity at no cost to himself, because he would be doing this in his will, to set free all these people. Instead, and this is really true, he wanted to buy some better wine. I mean, it's an exaggeration in one sense, but not in another. Mm-hmm. And it is clearly the case that none of these guys, in our context of modern awareness of humanity, are legitimate representatives of the ideal of America today. So I don't want to get into this question of, well, gosh, Washington won the war or Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. And that is not so significant. I want to know at what point culturally, and remember, we're not talking about just the situation in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about an issue that goes to the heart of the whole mythology of America. Mm-hmm. At what point do we say, well, these were bad guys, but they did some good things and we therefore support them? Or do we say, which I would not oppose, let's do away with all this mythology? I think the suggestion of putting Mount Hood on the $5 bill or something, well, that's Lincoln. putting mm-hmm. somebody on the, you know, it makes some sense. On the other hand, and I want to point out, by the way, the European monies now are all not people. They've gone with the euro to a relatively uninteresting design structure, which does not glorify anybody. And I think that we would do well as a nation to consider such an approach. So I'm not really going to argue that we shouldn't do away with the name of Jefferson High School if the people of the community feel that it's an affront and that it expresses a fundamentally racist attitude toward America. I'm not going to argue that we shouldn't do that. I think it's up to the community.
Absolutely.
And I absolutely agree with that. And that also would be true for Washington. And then there's even the weirder one, which is the Franklin High School, mm-hmm. which are called the Quakers. Quakerism is a very valid religious belief set that played a major role in English and American history, and it is pacifist and is nonviolent and so on, very important, and certainly doesn't fit a football team. You don't play football nonviolently.
Right.
You know. So it's absurd, and it's a misunderstanding. It's a misunderstanding.
I'd like
coming.
To gain 7 yards if that's all right with you, sir.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I'll have to ask God about that. The point being here that it is all of it, all of the high school rah-rah nonsense, all of it is, to my mind, silly. And you want to get rid of that. Now, I'm not gonna say no, you shouldn't do that, because after all, Jefferson did frame the constitutional methodology that he did, in fact, create the Declaration of Independence. He was a great man, despite all this.
You know, and early out you said, you know, like he was a man of his times, and
yeah,
I take issue with that, because you disregard the 200 black men on his plantation as if they felt the same way he did.
Well, I assume they didn't.
Well, but they were men of his time also.
That's a good point.
That's a very good point.
That's a very good point. And there's no question. Look, there is no question in my mind. I said this earlier, and I'll say it again. Most of us learned our history in grade school and high school. Most of that history was riddled with mythology and falsehoods. It may not be so much true today. I don't know what the curriculum looks like in high school now, but or grade school. So a lot of it was nonsense. And we were routinely taught a set of mythologies that, for example, I think that all the stories I learned about Lincoln in grade school were a mythology. The real Lincoln, who was not sure about the question of race mm-hmm. at all. The real Lincoln was a very pragmatic man trying to hold together the country, not necessarily to free slaves, though that he came to that position as both a tactical and a moral question much later. And I think that if we taught real history, this whole conversation might be moot. As to the question of whether or not somebody is inherently an insult to persons of color, well, Jefferson, Washington, you know, they were.
Madison.
Wilson, yeah. Marshall. A whole bunch of high schools in Portland.
Marshall.
At one time.
Not Marshall.
James Marshall, the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Was a Virginia planter, yes.
Was that? I did not even know that.
Monroe.
Oh, indeed.
He got a doctorate.
You are listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. We're joined today in studio by Clifford Walker and Andre Walker. We're discussing an upcoming community meeting set for 5:30 p.m. this coming Monday, the 29th of January, at the North Portland Library, about whether the name of Thomas Jefferson High School ought to be changed.
Yeah, and I want to interject something totally inappropriate to this conversation.
Okay.
Which is, if you haven't put your ballot in the box, it's too late to do that. It's time now to take care of the young people of our state. It's time now to try to...
Now, you can go drop your ballot off today.
8 p.m.
Yeah. 8 p.m. Yeah.
Till 8 p.m. You have to go down there, though, to do it.
And I think that's entirely appropriate for today's conversation.
And I really hope people will vote, and I really want to be clear that they should vote in support of 101. There's a lot of lies going out there. I got one of those robocalls, mm-hmm. which was full of bull.
Oh, my.
And it enraged me, but there's nothing I can do about it. This is a no-brainer. This is a shifting of monies. It does not inherently cause you or me any increased costs for healthcare or anything else. It's just a good idea. And the fact that it's being opposed is kind of Trumpian. And I'm really hoping that anybody who hasn't put their ballot in will do so today. That's all.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's take care of a little business, and then we'll take some phone calls.
Okay.
All right, coming up this morning on KBLO at 9 on Alternative Radio, it's part two of Jonathan Haywood, John Pilger, and Julian Assange speaking on propaganda, facts, and fake news. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage in the studio, the founders of Side-Eyed Collaborations talk about their new production of The Clark Doll, a play that explores internalized hatred and how that intersects with womanhood and blackness. And at 11:30, Art Focus talks to Jesselyn Haganos, apologies for pronunciation, whose show Cascades is now on at the Russo Lee Gallery. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO. Who do we have? James, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
The only people who benefit from erasing Jefferson from public view are the international slave traders who are in the process of enslaving the American people through the central bank.
Okay.
James?
Goodbye, James.
That makes
absolutely no sense at all. I'm not going to mess with that nonsense.
Really? I would have liked to mess with that nonsense for a little bit.
No. It's just...
Rod, you're next. What's on your mind?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, seems to me like panel's spending a lot of time discussing Jefferson. You're supposed to be talking about removing symbol. Mm-hmm. The symbol is taking up most of the energy and most of the air in the room. I don't think that's helpful. Secondly, I don't think the focus should be on taking down a symbol. I think the focus should be on putting up a symbol. I think that in Washington, when we put up the Martin Luther King statue, we weren't interested in taking down any other symbols in and around Capitol. Interested in putting up a symbol. I would say and recommend put up a symbol if you want a symbol. Start there. And secondly, I would say that you could also add W.E.B. Du Bois. Put the symbol up for him, an American and global scholar and sociologist and activist. Whose interpretation of history, not only this country, but much of Europe and Africa. One of the founders and fathers of Pan-Africanism. Put up a statue for him.
I love that idea.
If there's a seriousness about schools, I would say the secondary issue is taking them down. The first issue, if you want an issue that represents who you are and what your community is about, what your history is about, put your people together, put up the statue. Don't wait, get it. Even if it has to be a piece of cardboard, put the damn thing up. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call. No. Yeah, certainly Du Bois is worthy of memorialization and a host of other people as well. But I think that that's sort of sidesteps the larger, or part of the larger problem, which is that for generations now, literally thousands of African-American students have had to pass beneath the statue of a slaveholder every time they go to school in the morning. That is not a meaningless thing. That is not merely a symbolic thing. And if the community wants to do away with that symbol, I think that is the community's right.
Well, and I agree with that. And look, if the community really feels that this slaveholder, this particular slaveholder, is unworthy of that statue and unworthy of the kind of support that... the mythology gives him, hey, take him down. But, you know, you're running, as soon as you start doing this, as soon as you start making statues, you run into kinds of problems. Du Bois, hey, I would love to see a Du Bois high school, but I can't in a town which has a very small minority population. That's very unlikely to happen. The same would be true for Malcolm X or even Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize, and I think this is a very sad fact, Courtney Clifford and I have talked about this. This is a city that I see as very racist. This is a city that has always had a history of treating African Americans as second-class citizens. Courtney and I can remember a time when crosses were burned when the first African American families moved to the other side of 7th. So it's all real, and it's unmistakable. And the behavior of the police in the past, all kinds of things indicate the injustices done to persons of color in this city. If the removal of these statues will strengthen and in some manner change the way things are, hey, let's do it. But I'm suspicious of erasing history per se.
The fact of the matter is we don't want to lose the fact that this was a nation founded on racist principles. We have to stay with that or we can't change it. And that's my objection. It's not It's not the question of Jefferson High School or whatever.
Right. I absolutely agree. I would say that I don't think a community organizing to dismantle a symbol of oppression, organize it. I think that's, in a sense, creating history, right? And us changing Thomas Jefferson's high school name is not erasing the history of Jefferson. There are people that have dedicated their entire lives to studying Jefferson, and maybe this will spark the fire to make us think about him more critically. Maybe it has a potential to change the curriculum that we're teaching in school.
Right. Nobody's going to stop reading the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly.
Right. Charlotte is next. Good morning.
Yeah, I want to come at this from a little bit different angle, because I do think that the elemental ideas as well as the reality are important. No people are perfect. They're rooted in the political economy and culture of their time. And the Constitution comes out of that. And there are, however, people who have ideals and frame those ideals that are better than their time. And I believe that those were things that Thomas Jefferson did. And the primary ideals I want to talk about are the equality of all people, even though it didn't show up perfectly in the establishment of the government, but also the separation of church and state. And the reason I want to bring this up is that these things are actually, even though people weren't perfect and the country and culture and economics were not perfect, they are actually ideals that are based on a just society and have been really pivotal in terms of being expressed over the decades, over the centuries, and of being a model of a just society that gave people, that actually were education in the public schools, even if they were mythological. And I'm using myself, but I'm also saying that for others to have an exposure to the concept that people are equal and that there should be separation of church and state. When people discover that that's not really true, one of the biggest impetuses to change and that make people become active when they see that the society is not as just as the ideal is to see the hypocrisy of the society and to have those ideals as they take action to try to make a more just society. And I actually feel that those two things, which are definitely not being acted out in the political economy of this society and the way that politics is playing out in relation to religion in this society, those are two of the most pivotal ideas right now to defend and to see as ideals and to try to work for to make the society more just, as both of those things are being attacked and undermined by the predominant money, political economy elements of the society today. So I really think we have to think about it in terms of the bigger picture too. And those two things I think should really be thought about seriously in deciding about how much to attack people of the past that were living in their time and trying to maneuver towards making a better society. You know, what are all the predominant issues, and what are some of the most predominant issues now? I'm not discounting the racism at all, but without a concept of the equality of people as being part of the ideals that were set up in the Constitution, we would have a very different society now. And it's the same with no religion being the dominant, being supposed to be state supported and to be a dominant distinct. It was supposed to be people had power, and they had power over their own lives, and should also be able to have power over their own decisions about religion and stuff.
Specifically white men, when that was written, right? They were talking to a very specific group of people.
Yes, but if everybody's being taught those concepts now, we can teach about how it was not only is there hypocrisy now and should there be justice now that everybody works towards, but we can also have a better way of teaching about how things were set up, what the ideals were, and the weaknesses of people. This is a little off the wall that just came into my mind, mm-hmm. but, you know, no one, you were just talking about some, no one is going to be a perfect person to look towards for the significant things that they did. And there are going to be some people that can, for example, say Martin Luther King really treated his wife badly by not being the kind of family man he should have been. And so therefore we should be dissing him. We honor him for all of the work that he did for everybody and know that he was a fallible person, just like many others who actually have been very significant people trying to make a juster society for everybody. And you can go on and talk about this if you want, but I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. You have a comment?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And I think it is very important to think about the ideology and the bigger picture, right? Religious freedom is very, very important to our society. My rebuttal, I guess, is that even though we need to think about who they were writing to when they wrote these ideals, right? Thomas Jefferson did not believe in equality for all people. And I think that's something we needed to think about. He may have written it, but he did not practice it or believe it. And as such, I think that makes him invalid candidate for, and absolutely, humans are fallible. In my perfect world, things shouldn't be named after people, honestly, but that's a whole nother conversation. But it's because people can do such terrible things. And he was a violent, he perpetuated violence against people of color. And I don't know.
Yeah, and you're arguing that in itself renders him unworthy of having a high school named after him.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I don't want to put words in Charlotte's mouth, but I think one of the concepts she was trying to get across was, as imperfect a messenger as Jefferson and his contemporaries were for these concepts like equality and separation of church and state, they nevertheless created the language and they implanted the concept into our national mythology, mm-hmm. such that now, hundreds of years removed from that date, we're able to have conversations like this one. So I think she's arguing that despite his fallibility as a human being, these ideas have persevered and were the better for those ideas.
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree too. But nevertheless, maybe we don't name a high school after him.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Who's next? Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think the previous caller was making a point about the danger of erasing information in order to save information, and I think it's kind of far-fetched. She's saying that essentially she's giving up on the idea that these subtleties can be actually taught instead of the very low moral mythologies that were taught us. She was giving up on the idea that we can teach kids at a young age these subtleties. And I don't think everyone in society needs to have be hit upside the head and be hitting their head against the wall of hypocrisy in order to learn that it's hypocrisy. I mean, if they'd learned about the subtleties in the first place, they could still recognize the hypocrisy that they see around them later on and in adult life. So I think it still needs to be taught in the schools. And whether they keep the name or of that one specific school or not, it can still be taught in a respectful way as I don't know, humanity, I guess, the humanities. And actually, that school, in a sense, talking smack about their namesake, that would have a great impact as well. That would change history. I think it'd be great. But my fundamental question is about solutions. So, Joe, you've taught history. Do you know anything about how the British, who outlawed the trade of slaves from Africa, how they handled some of these issues later on to not demonize, but then again to not accept or bolster slave or the looking down on African American or Africans in general, or just anyone they are in power of? Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I know a little about British history. I'm not a British history person. And I also know that England has had a long history of racism, that after all, the whole British Empire was founded on the notion of the white man's burden. And there's no question about the notion of the innate superiority of the British Empire during its history. That being said, England certainly moved more quickly than the United States did on the slavery question. The reason why slavery persisted, let's be real about this, didn't have much to do with ideology. That was merely a justification. The fact of the matter is that we had a system of capitalism that really worked. We had mills in the north that took advantage of water power and other sources of power and cheap labor, paid labor. And we had a system in the south that used very cheap labor to produce cotton. And the whole expansion of the United States actually has a lot to do with the fact that when you grow cotton, you wear the land out and you have to move on. And that drove us into taking a third of Mexico. It drove us into a whole host of activities that are outrageous. The history of the United States is a history of imperialism. It's a history of advancing, in totally racist terms, the destruction of Native Americans and so on. If we are going to dismantle or demystify the history of the country, which I think is a good idea, we need to start at a very young age. We need to give up the customs that I think still persist of making a hatchet to symbolize the cherry tree that Washington allegedly cut down. He was so honest and told his father about, which, by the way, is a total myth, actually created by a Reverend Weems who wanted to deify Washington. We need to get rid of a lot of stuff like that. And in doing that, in teaching history for real, we are really challenged because we still want to make a person from the United States feel the unique aspects, and I think there are many unique aspects of the United States. At the same time, not having a critical view is a terrible disaster. We have right now a government which is founded basically on a know-nothing set of principles and is led by a fundamental racist. So we can see the dangers of the situation. I'm kind of two minds on this Jefferson thing. I would probably put the statue in the backyard or something. I don't think it matters to me very much whether or not the school is named after Jefferson or not. I think it's very ironic that the school that has the largest African-American population in the city is the school that is named after Jefferson. That's an accident of history. It's not an intentionality. And I think the neighborhood should have a power to change that if they want to.
Yeah, accidents of history can be remedied, right?
Well, hopefully. I hope so.
And like, are we born to continue the traditions of the founding races of this nation?
I would hope not.
Okay, and I think that's what we're doing here is suggesting new traditions and new ways.
Let's go back to the phones. Paul is next.
Oh, yeah, hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to ask a provocative question. Isn't the logical conclusion of this, taking down of the founders that the United States itself should not exist?
Yes, that is our master plan, Paul. You've stumbled across it. No, I don't think that's the logical
argument. No, I think Paul's raising a very good point.
Yeah, I think he is too. Continue, Paul, please.
Well, they are the ones who created the United States. They and their mindset, is what created the United States. And so if you're questioning their mindset, which was the mindset that created the United States, then you're questioning the very foundation of this country. And I personally think that's a good thing. I just don't think there's a lot of people who are willing to really go that far in reality.
Well, Paul, I agree with you mainly to the extent that we function consciously as a nation state with a great deal of mythology. And much of that mythology has embedded in it an enormous amount of racism, the slaughter of Native Americans, the existence of and persistence of slavery, the continued existence of racial injustice. All these are real. All of these things are frequently denied. And we need to deal with these things. The only question I have is how best to deal with it. Do we deal with it by disappearing the symbols of racism, in this case, a mixed blessing in the case of Jefferson? Or
I was interested in hearing what the guest had to say.
Pardon me?
I'm going to
shut up and listen.
Oh. Hey, thank you for the call, Paul. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. This is a question of exploring the foundation of what the United States represents. Fundamentally, the United States is an organization of white supremacists organized to enslave African people and use their labor to make wealth. Like, that is the fundamental essence of the United States of America when it comes to, you know, if you're looking at it from a business standpoint. And I think we need to look at that history. We need to see how far are we from that history? How far have we come since we were established, right? I want to make the argument that we're not that far ahead of where we started. We need to have the conversation. And I think, for me, a great place to start is our neighborhood.
I agree that it would be good to have new symbols for our nation. When I look at the American flag and see those 13 stripes, those 13 stripes represent to me a time in history where 13 slave colonies agreed to protect the interests of slavery. And if you don't know your history, you don't know your flag. And you don't realize the biggest part of your flag is a symbol of racial oppression.
Another Paul is standing by. Paul. Paul number two.
Yeah,
what's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm Paul from Woodburn. And the previous Paul, he was actually kind of driving the same point that I was calling you guys about. Because I've listened to your program in the past, and it's been about the taking Native American mascots away from, you know, schools. And so then now you have the Indians are taken away, and now it sounds like Thomas Jefferson, you know, the Cowboys. So if you take away the Cowboys and Indians,
wait a minute now. I don't think it's accurate to characterize Jefferson as a cowboy.
No, but I think your point is the white ruling class, right?
Well, it's just where are we going to go from here? Like, where do we put ourselves today? Like, if I mean, this is all this is just hypothetical. But say we Thomas Jefferson, they all come back and they say, hey, we made a mistake, and we give and the country is very diverse now, and we are giving it to you to make what you want of it. The you know redesign the flag. Do as such, you know, are we looking at, is that a realistic thing, or are there things working that aren't in the control of us citizens? Are we still, you know, slaves in a way to policy?
Well,
I'll just leave you with that. Okay? I gotta go to work.
Thanks for the call. If I could just take a stab at that. Jefferson once said, the earth belongs to the living. And what he meant by that was, it is up to us to determine how we want to live and what our society ought to be. We have the tools to do that. So I think it's entirely appropriate that we make decisions like, how do we name our high schools? And it's entirely appropriate that communities have discussions about them.
Yeah, and I just want to emphasize a point I made earlier, which I think is really important. We teach our children mythology rather than teaching them history. As far as I know. And when we do that, we reinforce inevitably a whole bunch of realities that are racist, that are sexist, that are classist, and that justify, for example, the slaughter of Native Americans. We cannot get away with that unless we really talk true history. And we don't. We don't do that for our children, and we don't do that to a large extent all the way up through into high school and probably in some places into college. So it's a real problem of education, if nothing else. As to the question of the symbols, whether or not we keep Jefferson, or whether or not we keep the Quakers, which I think is ridiculous, at Franklin, or whether or not we keep Washington High School, Washington, to me, less important than that we teach the real facts.
And I think had we started teaching the real facts earlier, these things would already be changed by now, right?
So. Probably. Possibly. Well, I'll say possibly.
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah, well, I think we would be having these conversations earlier.
Yeah.
And who knows where
you know,
we'll
I think
be.
It's a good conversation. I think it's something that needs to be discussed a great deal.
Wow.
I think actually, in fact, if you guys do decide to do away with Jefferson, there'll be a lot of dialogue because, after all, Jeff is a totem of our culture in a larger sense. Jeff is the school that produced powerful communities of athletes and scholars, and it was, for a long time, really the home for many, many African Americans.
All right, Jack writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, regarding today's show, Purging Jefferson, should we purge words like democracy because the Greeks owned slaves? Just asking. Well, Jack, I think you're fundamentally misunderstanding this conversation if you think it's about purging Jefferson. It is not. It is about whether or not it's appropriate to name high school after him. Jefferson, the historical figure, Jefferson, the political philosopher, I think will still continue to be studied even within the halls of what is now Jefferson High School. Do you guys have any comment on that?
Well, I question if the students at Jefferson are being taught about Jefferson.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Being a former student at Jefferson,
I didn't learn that.
I had no idea.
Right. I can speak to my high school experience, which was terrible, which was in San Diego, in a school that was a third European American, a third Hispanic, and a third Black. And in fact, that school's almost all of its representation was dominated by European Americans. So I know how things were when you and I went to school, and it was definitely racist and biased and very unrealistic.
Belinda writes in to say, can't believe changing the name of JHS, Jefferson High School, is an issue, or that all you guys, in capital letters, managed not to mention that Jefferson is a known rapist. Also, I nominate Black bicycle racing champion Marshall Taylor to be honored by the new name. I think we did mention earlier that Jefferson's female slaves did not have the power to consent.
Well, no slave
no
had
slave
a,
did, right.
No slave had a power
I don't think
of consent.
We used the term rape or rapist, but I'll go ahead and say it. Jefferson was a rapist.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Who's next? Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning. It seems clear to me that there's a one side being positioned throughout this morning's discourse. And I want to say, even though I am totally against everything that happened in the way of maltreatment to any race, period, I do want to defend Jefferson on this point. It is important to read history and to remember history. I'm going to quote two very short pieces, one from the Encyclopedia Americana, and this is regarding Jefferson's drafting of the original draft of the Declaration of Independence. Clause 20 that he wrote, and it says this, Clause 20, this is the first quote, was omitted out of compliance to South Carolina and Georgia, who had never attempted to restrain the importation of slaves, and who, on the contrary, still wished to continue it. And following that, in my favorite book, John Adams, The American Revolution, by Catherine Drinker Bowen, on page 601, in which Jefferson had composed, it states, 20 separate clauses, and he fiercely was protecting the reason for the declaration. Congress cut, slashed, deleted, contracted, changed words and phrases, and then took out entirely Jefferson's most cherished outburst against the slave trade. This assemblage of horrors, Jefferson had called it, this market where men are bought and sold. He had written an entire clause expressing his disgust with slave action coming from Britain. It is very important to read everything before one denounces a person on his entirety. So please, if someone has any ability to find this, look for Cause 20. By the way, John Adams also supported Jefferson in this, but there were so many people in the South who absolutely were against releasing their slaves. So please look at this in the full context of who the man was and that he actually did try for this and was absolutely shouted down.
I think that's a very useful piece of information.
Thank you for
the
call.
I did not know that. I appreciate that.
My response is, if he was so against it, why would he hold his slaves beyond his death?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that outlines his personal hypocrisy perfectly. Early in his career, as a young man, he was a member of the Virginia House of Burgesses, and he introduced a bill there to do away with slavery. And it nearly cost him his entire political career because, of course, the House of Burgesses was made up of slave owners, and they were not about to pass a law that was going to do away with their livelihood, and their right to own other human beings. So while he did speak out over the course of his life, often in very radical terms against the institution of slavery, he never could quite take the step.
The real step of
freeing his own. I mean, he didn't free his slaves and move to Boston, did he?
Good wine is good wine, you know.
Good wine is good wine.
There you go. Good wine is good wine.
Let's take one more call, and then we'll wrap things up. George, it's going to have to be fast.
Hey, I just wanted to mention, and Joe already mentioned capital and capitalism, but it needs to be said again that it's a very coercive force, and the coercion has effects in causing people, and if white people trample on poor white people, they trample on black people, and black people who become wealthy may even trample on some black people. But the question of the economy and its coercive power, which is getting more and more in our face, is worth pursuing.
Indeed. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry.
I think it's really a worthy conversation. I'm glad you people came in.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I want to thank everybody who's listened, and I want to urge you all to keep listening to KBOO. And I also want to remind you to vote today for Measure 101.
Andre, tell us quickly when the community meeting is taking place.
January 29th, this following Monday, from 5:30 to 7:45 at the North Portland Library. Join us.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for those of you who took the time to call, and we'll be back at you next week.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens' night.